Hello, my name's Richard Cox and I'm here with Tim Freak today again, and today we're going to attempt to have a conversation about magic. So good morning, Tim.
Hi.
Out of the various things we've talked about, magic is perhaps the most vague one to define. I think we have a sense of what we mean by it, but could you perhaps start the ball rolling by saying, how would you define what we're talking about in terms of magic and manifestation?
I think essentially magic is something we can define or get a handle on, because magic is the intuition which human beings seem to have always had, that not only can you affect what happens in the world causally with what you do, but also you can affect the world magically with how you think or how you intend. And it's part of a wide spectrum of ideas, including things like karma, for instance, that your psychic life, your soul life, impacts what happens around you and what happens to you. It's not just a side effect. It's actually interacting with life, and that effect of the inner on the outer, if you like, is magic.
It's certainly something people experience. Before we even ask any questions about the validity of it, or is it kind of confirmation bias, people in massive numbers believe that magical events happen in their lives.
Hugely. And what's so interesting is, even amongst those that if you asked them might go, no, I don't think so, display in their actual actions and the way they, and in off moments that you hear what they say, you can say, I have a very close friend of mine who's a scientist, a biologist, and she's applying for really good PhD right now. And it was lovely because in her text to me, she just said, fingers crossed.
Yeah.
Now, it was just a thing that we say. But what was interesting was that she said it. Now, what that means is, you know, that is, what's that doing? Well, that's not going to bring about any change in the world, as far as we know, causally. But it is a symbolic act which goes, my intention will happen. And in making it a symbolic act and going, that this is focusing my intention to happen, it may make a magical effect on the one hand, or it could be just regarded, obviously, as silly superstition.
Sure. Well, people have observed it now. People throughout history have observed this phenomenon, and people historically have also tried to harness it in some way. And there is this tradition of the study of magic, which has sat alongside, perhaps in parallel to, the esoteric traditions. Can you speak to that at all?
I think they've often come together, and sometimes they've been in opposition to each other. Throughout East and West, actually, I think you see these two traditions. Because I think if you are investigating the depths of life, if you're looking into the nature of soul, you very quickly come across that phenomena. The most obvious phenomena because I think we're talking about something very natural here, is what now gets called synchronicity from Jung. So huge numbers, massive numbers of people experience outrageous, meaningful coincidences in their life. Some, you know, experience huge numbers of them all the time. So this is a phenomena that people report. And I think, I imagine that was happening throughout the whole of history. I don't imagine this is something new that's just happening now. So I think the study of magic comes from noticing this interactiveness. And of course, if you've got a theological perspective, a sense that you're interacting with a divine being or beings, which is a way of conceptualizing how this might work. So magic becomes a whole spectrum of things, from petitioning the gods or God, through to a more quasi-causal thing, where it feels like there's some forms of magic which feel more mechanical than that. You do certain things and this may have an effect. But we're doing it. I mean, one of the things that always make, which and I'm listening to, I don't know, watching the TV at the moment with all of the American elections, and there they are, God bless America. And it's really interesting that people, all these people saying, God bless, as if they didn't say it, what, God wouldn't bless America? So why are they saying it? Because they're intervening with their intention to focus this benign power on what they want to focus it on.
Yeah, so it's interesting how different frameworks arise to explain magic, so, or it can be explained in a variety of different contexts theologically. So idealism, the idea that everything is one big mind and this is like a dream. Well, if I conceive of the world like a dream, it's becomes really explicable how my thoughts can imprint on that. But equally, magical thinking is really a big part of evangelical Christianity now, but with a different explanation. You're petitioning this divine being of infinite power and he or she does it then on your behalf.
Yes. Yeah. Like everything, you know, for me, it's like my interest is there is a phenomena here. I don't doubt that personally. I've just seen far too much. But it's not obvious what it is, and it's not obvious how it works. So for me, it becomes like, well, we should be looking at this. We should try and understand this, and we should not assume that past understandings, any of them, are right. You know, no past understanding was right about the nature of matter, or, you know, it wasn't very long ago that the brain was understood as a cooling system for the heart and all the blood and all of that. So we shouldn't assume that the ancients knew about magic and we've forgotten. But what you can see is that right back to the early shamanic times, one of the key things is magical intervention. Mm. Now, you asked about the relationship between the two, and I think there has been tension between mystics and magicians because there is a tendency in mysticism to go into a state of passivity, that you're surrendering to life or to God or the Tao, and therefore you don't intervene. And there's something very individualistic and interventionist about magic. Mm. Personally, I think they fit as a paralogical thinker. I think those two fit together perfectly because there's a part of us which is just being with it and letting it just arise. And then there's the individual aspect, which is coming from that, where we do need to intervene. And I think our intentions and are as important as our actions. They're both important.
Okay. I might return to that, how those two things sit together in a minute. But I'd really like to know, because you've written obviously a lot about your spiritual awakening as a teenager and your investigation subsequently of the world's esoteric traditions. I've also heard a rumor that you were deeply involved in magic and the study of magic for years of your life. So how did you first come across this idea of thoughts can imprint on reality? What did you do about that?
You've just started a conversation, which if we really have it, will just sound nuts. And, you know, I like to maintain an outer facade that people can trust my judgment.
You can edit it to make yourself sound as good as you want.
I'll tell you how it started. Let me at least tell you that. This is a period in my life. I treasure it. It was nuts. I was very young. I was 20-ish. Magic had always been around in the sense that synchronicities were happening to me ever since I was very young. As soon as the awakening happened, bang, we were into magical connections and all things happening and following that lead and that sense of being guided that we have when life becomes very dreamlike. And it led to, I'm trying to condense this very long story into the pithy bit. I went to India and I came back from India dressed head to toe in Tibetan clothes, pretty much. And while I'd been in India, I had met some occultists and this impressed me in India. And I came back and I was at my parents' house and I was sitting on my bed meditating. And I went into a deep meditation and my prayer intention was, I want to meet a living magician who can show me what magic is firsthand because I don't want to just read books about it. And I went to sleep and the next morning, fairly early in the morning, I received a phone call from my dear friend and fellow explorer, Peter Gandhi, who many people will know because we ended up writing many books, including the Jesus Mysteries together. And Peter was at that time at university in Cardiff, and he rang me up very excitedly. You've got to remember, we were young. Going, Tim, I've just found the keys to heaven. It's called the Kabbalah. And I was like, wow, what's that then? And he said, I just met a magician. And I was on the train that day, and that began a extraordinary year in my life, which was like being in one long dream, or for those of you who can relate to this in a different way, like being on one long acid trip, really, where extraordinary things were just happening all the time, and it was just nuts. And there's a lot there still I don't really understand. It was intense. It was like walking into a different world, and I'm pleased I went in, and I was pleased I came out again. You know, they talk about the labyrinth of images, and it was like that. It was like eventually getting lost in something. And that, for me, ended up to bring me back to actually more the mystical. That's when I came out. Mm-hmm. Do you know what? I just want to return to my relationship with the oneness, with God, with the love, bringing this love in. I just want to just get it simple again. And that's been really my focus ever since.
By really immersing yourself in magical practice, the world did become more dreamlike.
Totally. Mm-hmm. Outrageously. It just felt like you were, every day felt like it could be in a chapter in some bizarre magical realist novel. I was with a lot of other young people, and we were having an extraordinary time, and there was a great willingness for us to step into that world. I'm not sure there was an awful lot of critical thinking going mm-hmm. on either, which allowed us to step into what I saw was we stepped into the imagination, and the lines between the imagination and the sensual world were extremely blurred. And that's why I compared it to a dream or okay. taking it.
So coming out of that, I perhaps suspect that story is not atypical. Maybe it's atypical in its intensity, but I can relate to it myself. I found out about this phenomenon, thought, wow, my thoughts can influence, that's just amazing. And what can I do with this? Got really intensely into it, noticed the world became very dreamlike and synchronicitous for a period, and then for some reason felt like stepping back from that, and life still goes on, but without quite the same level of every day a mad thing happens. And I think that's probably, there's something typical about that. But what did you take from that period into life when you calmed down from it slightly? And what kind of advice would you give to someone who would be interested in, that they found out about this idea of magic and want to know how to utilize it for their benefit, the benefit around them, without going mad?
Well, one of the things which I've done in my new book, Soul Story, which unfortunately isn't out until April, but which I'm starting to talk about at my Deep Awakening events and other things a lot now. One of the things I've tried to do in that is actually bring in this magical element and treat it rationally and go, okay, so what is this? Why does it work? And why doesn't it work? And that feels just as important. And since the extreme experiences of when I was young, there have been many, many other magical events. I've written about some of them in my various books. How Long Is Now? I tell the story of what would be put in modern terms as manifesting a 24-track recording studio within a couple of weeks in the country, and that happened to me. So I know those things happen. I also know they don't happen. I also know that, you know, otherwise we would just press the magic button and all sorts of great things would happen. So what's going on? So my feeling is we need to understand it. And the place I've ended up with it is that what we have is an evolutionary process whereby we know that the evolutionary process that's been going on for 13.8 billion years has led to the arising of the psyche, of the soul. That this is emerged through this process. That's what we say. We know that. That is current scientific thinking, which I find convincing. With that, I suggest, has come this phenomena whereby this level of reality is not just a side effect of this level. The problem with scientific materialism is it thinks this is real and this is somehow nothing. Whereas I think it's the other way around. This is more emergent. This has arrived later and is, in a sense, not more real, but more powerful. And that there is a constant interaction between these two levels. It's happening right now. Actually, in this conversation, I'm intending to say symbolic sounds, and you're hearing the symbolic sounds and decoding them in soul. So my intentions are allowing me to moving my hands, they're moving my mouth, they're creating symbolic sounds, all of it. So my suspicion is that what's happening is that just as I am physically connected with everything, but it's easier for me to move this cup, so I am in soul, in the soul dimension, in the psyche, I'm connected with everything. And we are passing information between each other, and it's affecting the collective in the same way. And in the same way that it's much easier to move things which are close to me, it's much easier to affect with my intentions things that I'm closer to, except closer to in the psyche, which isn't to do with proximity in space, because there is no space. It's closer in meaning or story. Because what defines the psyche, the soul, is narrative. It's the place where the story of Tim is and the story of Richard is. And therefore, the way that we see that story, that narrative, and the way it interacts with the collective through our intentions can infect the overall story. So that's a big thought. And I'm just going to give you a simple metaphor to see if it helps to get that, is to think about something like a computer game, where you've got a physical level of the game, which is digital information and all the rest of it, and then you've got a narrative level where you're not paying attention to any of that, but you're interacting with, my intention is to get to the castle and rescue the maiden, or whatever it is that's the game, or fight the baddie, or whatever it is. So you're actually interacting on a narrative level with that reality, although that reality is also functioning on a completely non-narrative level, which is causal. And if you looked at close up, there's no narrative in it whatsoever. And I suspect that's what's happening also in a different way with our everyday reality, that we're interacting at once on a physical causal level and on a magical narrative level. And magic isn't something that happens sometimes, it's happening all of the time. It's that most of the time we don't notice it, because its effect is so slight. Just as most of the time I don't notice the fact that when I walk into the room, it gets slightly warmer because it's so slight. But it happens because I'm hot. I'm hotter than the room. In the same way, our thoughts are affecting everything that's happening collectively and affecting what comes back to us. And then magic becomes a way of focusing that and deliberately harnessing that tendency. Now, if you're going to do that, I think there's two things. One is, first of all, to be very clear about why you're doing it and where it's coming from. Because magic is amoral. There's black and white, if you like. Yeah. There's progressive magic and there's retrogressive magic. There's love magic and there's selfish magic. You know, and you need to be very clear why you're intervening, because that's your thoughts. And the other thing, which is for me is important with all of it, is not to end up in an absolutist philosophy about it. So much of the problems for me in modern spirituality, or traditional spirituality as well, is it's absolutist. So, for instance, people get the idea that thoughts create things and then go, everything is created by my thoughts. Everything, I've read it constantly. When will you realize everything that happens to you is showing you something about what you think? Sounds great, but if you stop and think about it, it's not great. Because then you've got to pick up a baby 6 months old with AIDS and go, why have you created this, baby? It's just nuts. But what, so that's an absolute, or the other absolutism is everything is God's will. And again, the same thing. Hey, baby, that's God's will. There's a way of thinking about these things, which isn't absolute, which goes, life is being created by whole matrices of different levels of interaction. One of which is that straightforward, brutal causality, which allows me to pick up my phone and drop it. And then there's another level, which is also there. Not as instead, but as well, so that you don't see your thoughts as all powerful, or you don't see as bad things that happen to you as some sort of punishment for bad thoughts, but actually you see that you can interact with things causally and you can interact with them intentionally. Neither are guaranteed to bring the results you want. Probably with both levels, mostly you won't get the results you want, because you live in a complex reality full of many people, all of whom are doing it the same thing as well. But it is another thing you have to bring goodness into the world. So that kind of larger picture is the one that I want to put magic within.
Okay. And just harking back to what you said earlier about the magician and the mystic sometimes being in opposition to each other, but also it's possible to see them having more of togetherness, just picking up on the two different aspects of magic, the black and the white that you mentioned there. Is that is that the same thing, effectively, that I can do magic from a kind of, I want a Ferrari, and it's a kind of egotistical desire that's fulfilling some sort of weakness in my psyche as an attempt to colour for, say, in trying to manifest this, or there's a magic that comes from being sunk into a deeper place within and examining what my thoughts are manifesting in the world and trying to come to the place of the greatest good.
Absolutely. And I think that's, having that intentionality for the greatest good and playing that out. And also, just like you would with your actions, for me, it feels like, look, magic is natural. I think it's happening all the time. The idea that you could avoid doing it is the same as for me, as you can avoid acting. You can't avoid acting. You could lock yourself up like Julian of Norwich or something and do your best to, but you'll still be acting. Even in doing that. So why not go, I'm an actor in the world. I do things with my body. And I also do things with my psyche, my intention. I'm giving information off with that all the time. So then it becomes, what do I do with my body and what do I do with my soul? And if you can focus it on, I want a Ferrari, and you know what, there's nothing wrong with that. It's not hurting anyone else. I mean, maybe you could say all Ferraris are hurting the planet. I don't know. But in its sense, I'm not against people doing things which they enjoy or they love. I mean, why not? On the extreme, of course, is people like Adolf Hitler or people like that who seemed, from what we know, to be harnessing that kind of will for what clearly seems very dark ends, and consciously doing it. So it's more like, here's a natural phenomena. We're engaged with it whether we like it or not. It's happening. So let's engage with it consciously so that we put out goodwill. And that, to me, is what harnesses the magician and the mystic. That the mystic is about waking up to the oneness, to God, if you will, to that big love, and then the magician serves that, is the interactive power to go out and dare. And with everything I do my best. I try to do my best. What I mean is, I never think it's it. I never think, well, I know exactly. It's always like, well, I hope this will be the best I can do. And then if it turns out not to be, I change it. And my intentions are the same. I don't know what's best. But I need to try and discern that, because that's what it is to be alive. And in that discerning, I make that discernment, and then I have to learn from it and see whether it was the best. Does that make sense, what I'm saying?
Yes. Thank you very much for that, Tim. It's been a very interesting interview. And the other thing I'll do is, we didn't touch upon it, but there's a lot of science around the study of magic and synchronicity nowadays being done by people like Dr. Rupert Sheldrake and Dean Radin. So I'll put a link in beneath the video to maybe the Skeptico website, where people can listen to interviews if they're interested in the kind of double-blinded science that's being done in this area, that I think is a real gift to us, really, because people have these synchronicitous experiences like or the experience of having a thought of someone and then the telephone rings, and you can always think, well, was that a coincidence? But in the kind of research Sheldrake's done on that, he demonstrates it occurs way beyond what you'd expect at chance levels. So we'll put a link in below, and thanks very much for the...
And then there's some things, aren't there? There's some things which happen to you where you just... I mean, the interesting thing for in Jung's idea was it was a meaningful coincidence. And a lot of coincidences are funny.
Yes.
And a lot of synchronicities are funny. That's why I think it's a natural phenomenon. Because a lot of the magical feedback is kind of meaningless. It's just like, well, that was weird. You know, and all of that stuff where you just see, like seeing the Matrix. You can see it at work. But it's not particularly important. And a lot of it just makes you smile and go, that's fun. And you move on. And then sometimes, like dreams. You know, a lot of dreams are like, well, I just had a weird dream. And then sometimes, it's more than that. Sometimes it's like something happens. You go, oh, I need to pay attention to this. And the synchronicities kind of come at you and just, and I wonder whether there's a, go on.
I just think it can be hard to communicate to other people about synchronicities sometimes, because I've had amazing synchronicities and I've gone and told my friends and thinking, well, there's no way they can see that's anything beyond chance. And they don't see it as anything beyond chance, because what they don't see is how meaningful it was to me.
Yeah.
Right? And you can't convey that.
That's the key. And the feeling that comes with it, and the sense of that it's a psychic event, not just a physical event. And my analogy, which I don't know, it worked for me when I was thinking about this, and I stuck it in the Soul Story book because of that, is when I was writing the book, I was looking to buy myself a very nice Paul Smith shirt, which I fancied for when I go out giving talks and want to feel like I'm a little bit smart. And it wasn't cheap, so I was umming and ahhing about whether to buy it or not. And then I was going out on Facebook to see my messages and things. And then there it was on the side of the, you know, there was not just Paul Smith, but the shirt that I wanted. And every time I got to Facebook, there it was. Now, if I had no idea what was going on, I would look at that and go, whoa, that's a magical message to me to buy the Paul Smith shirt, which is of course what the advertisers are relying on. What's actually happened, of course, is they've been tracking where the websites I visit. They know I went visited this shirt. They know I went to that shirt. They're going, oh, show him that shirt and he might buy the shirt. I actually did eventually. But what I suspect with, you know, that is a mystery and magical and strange and woo, unless you understand how it works. Mm. And I feel it's the same with this, that we will get to the point over the next few decades where we start, once we can throw off this very narrow, silly objectivism, which goes, none of that's real. And actually start going, well, there's a whole spectrum to this human experience beyond the mechanical. What's going on with that? Because that's real too. It will open up understanding the way in which this meaningful interaction works. And then we'll start saying, oh, yeah, okay, that's...
Sure, and that's very important with the story about Facebook there, because there's a doctor called Kirby Surprise who studies...
Sorry, I just want to enjoy that name.
Of course. And he studies synchronicity. So there we go. And I don't want to, I'll probably slightly misrepresent how he puts this. I'll link to his interview below. But he got into this from working as a psychologist with people suffering from religious delusions. Okay. Right. And he was very interested in pattern recognition. Okay. How when you're into Christianity, say, you start seeing signs from God everywhere.
Yeah.
And trying to explain people's delusions to them that way. But what he realized is it wasn't ultimately satisfying because people were convinced that what they were experiencing was going beyond chance. And he came to see, yes, it is, because your mind's imprinting on reality in some ways. You are seeing these references to Jesus or Buddha or Muhammad or whatever if you're deeply immersed in that religion. But it doesn't necessarily mean that the supreme creator of the universe is sending them directly to you.
Exactly. Hugely important. And it's a point I've tried to make in Soul Story, you know, very briefly, where I deal with that, is that once you see that, it's really important, because I know loads of people, well, I myself, when I was much younger, I've been involved in a religious cult, where you magical things happen. That's why people are there. Mm-hmm. Incredible things happen. You see these powerful magical synchronicities and blah, 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 and you just think it's a confirmation rather than it is a natural phenomena which is reflecting back to you the way you're thinking or the way that you're interacting with reality.
Yeah.
And seeing that is hugely important, because then it doesn't, a lot of people, like, you know, I meet people who've gone, oh, you should just follow the synchronicities. I go, no.
Yeah. Yeah. I know several people that have gotten married because of that.
Yeah. Really?
Not good ends.
Yeah. Really? Because it's
not having this intense energy with another person, and synchronicitous things arise. And yeah. If you've got a framework that tells you that's coming from some infinitely wise mind.
Yeah, that's it. That's it. It's dangerous. So we need to engage all of us, including that part which goes, okay, if it happens, now, you know, think about that in a reasonable way and feel about it. You know, like you said, if you get a strong feeling, that often our intuitions are very, 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 well, the most important probably in how we act. So we need all of that. But we have missed, this is what we've ended up doing in this little bit we've got into now, is really just focusing in on the dangers of assuming we understand something we don't. And that what we need, it feels to me, is the openness to see that it's a real phenomenon, and then the humility to see we don't understand it, and then the imagination to do our best to understand it as we go along, and to be looking for ever better ways to understand it. And what I've tried to do in Soul Story is put a way of seeing this in place which fits in with a much broader story, which includes the waking up of the mystics and the developmental story of the scientists, and brings them all together in one coherent package, which goes, okay, let's think about it like this. Perhaps this will be the beginning of a way we can integrate all of those disparate experiences we all have into one understanding.
Okay, Tim. So I think you'll have to do what Carl Jung did and publish a book on that year of magical experience after you're dead.
Yes.
Okay. That's the only way to do it. And if I'm still around, I'll look forward to reading it. Thanks very much.
I'll give it to you and you can publish it for me.
I'll see you soon. Thanks for watching, everyone. Bye.